There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on a very cold day in the greater Starkville area. But many of you down south are dealing with some much more difficult conditions than we are here. And so our thoughts and prayers go out to you. I saw some pictures yesterday of some drilling platforms out in the Gulf that had snow on them. Not sure it's happened in my lifetime. If it has, it hasn't happened very often. But nevertheless, hope that you're doing well. I know that it is difficult when you have precipitation of the cold variety and then the temperatures never get over freezing, which means it lasts for a while. But hope that you guys are good. Hope that you have plenty of milk sandwiches to eat as you navigate through the challenging Arctic conditions that have befallen the South. It's so interesting that we didn't get any snow here, and thank goodness we didn't. But south of us, south of Jackson, many of you got absolutely hammered. Hammered! So you're enjoying a snow day. So I hope that your kids have enjoyed the time off, and I hope that you've had the opportunity to get out and enjoy some good times with them. Doesn't happen very often. I remember being a kid in South Mississippi. It rarely ever snowed. And when it did, we were always so incredibly happy for those 20 minutes we went outside and played in it until our hands turned bright red. But nevertheless, it is what it is. A lot to talk about today. Going to spend a lot of time talking about some new developments as they relate to Mississippi State football. I got some very pointed comments to make, too. Some of you aren't going to like that. I will look around here and see if I can't find some sympathy. Hang on a second. No, there is none, but nevertheless, we're going to discuss some things today that are important. We're going to discuss some things that I think need to be addressed. As we all love Mississippi State, some of us love it more than others. Some of us love our own opinions more than we love Mississippi State. I want what's best for Mississippi State. At every turn, I want us to be competitive in every avenue. I want us to have an incredible game day atmosphere. I want our fans to feel like they are welcome on our campus. And I want our fans to have a great experience and in turn donate money to the university to ensure that we are competitive in every aspect we can possibly be. That's the mission statement pretty much in a nutshell right there. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. We had some cuisine last night from The Grill, one of the Eat With Us restaurants. Man, and I love it. I love it. I love living in Starkville and having access to the Eat With Us group, man. I do. And it's not just Bulldog Burger Company. They're the primary sponsor. But I love the fact that I've got a great family of restaurants that have such consistency. I always know what I want to order. I always know what I'm going to get. And I'm always left satisfied. It's true. Live a lot of places. And I can tell you, I don't know that anybody does it better than the Eat With Us group. Of course, Bulldog Burger Company's been with us a long time. I love them. Of course, my son Ian works there. He's waited on many of you. He's had a great experience there. I suspect that he will be there until he's finished at Mississippi State because he loves the camaraderie and loves the organization and the management there at that place. And it's one of those great things, too, when you're a parent, when you find out that your child, your college-level child, gets a job that they love and they keep and it doesn't distract from their works, you know, academically, you know, it's been great. It has been. And he's out there bringing your burgers to you. Yeah, cool stuff, man. Bulldog Burger Company has three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and go check them out. The next time you're in town or on the way to town, have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And get that chocolate shake to ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. The first thing that we're going to celebrate today is the Zach Selman announcement yesterday of the LED lights at long last coming to Davis-Wade Stadium. Now, we've had LED lights at Duty Noble Field since the construction. Maybe unbeknownst to you, we have the same lighting system that the Atlanta Braves do. Yeah, how about that? Let me turn that down a little bit. I was jamming some music earlier, so you have to forgive me. But that's where we are. And it has felt like for some time that we've just kind of lagged behind the rest of the league. And I don't know if that's really a perception. I think that's the reality of it. Our game day atmosphere has been kind of stale. I mean, I'm just kind of calling it for what it is. I know there are some very talented individuals that have worked very hard to improve our game day experience. But you know what? We need some amenities. We need some buzzers and whistles. And now we're going to have them. And as I shared yesterday, you know, Zach Selman, of course, broke the news himself. And I kind of like that, too. Of course, we want to break everything over at jeanspage.com. But I think it's interesting when the university kind of says, hey, we're going to break our own news, especially something that has been discussed so much as this. And there's a video of Zach going up there to the control panel box and saying, you know, out with the old and with the new. Super stuff. Now, after the announcement, I did some due diligence and found out it is essentially going to be the same system that they use at South Carolina. Same controls, same technology. And the Williams-Brice light show, I think we can probably admit, those of us that watch a lot of SEC football, that's the one we've been the most envious of. You know, Tennessee's got some LED lights. Ole Miss has some too. But nobody uses them quite the way that South Carolina does. And Williams-Brice has always been, even in the down years, a tough place to go play football because the fans kind of pack it out. And how cool is it to be able to have that same experience now at Mississippi State? We got to figure out how to use all this kind of stuff, so it'll be a work in progress. But we've had multiple discussions with Zach Selman about this project in the last year. He never said he wasn't going to do it. At no point did he say, we're not going to do it. Now, he did say, hey, we got a couple options we can go. We can rip down the light standards and replace everything and spend about $27 million. Or we can retrofit what we have, save some money, but we're not certain that it'll have the same impact. Well, after due diligence and consultation with some other companies, they figured out, hey, this is a workable thing we can do. We can retrofit this and give you the desired result. So we're getting things done the way we should. And any time that you can get the desired result for less money, that's good business. There are a lot of people out there, even some of our neighbors in the SEC, that they're more concerned about our price rather than our productivity. If I can do the same or better for less money, then I'd be a fool not to do it. You don't want to go write a check just to write a check, just so you can say we wrote a big check. You know, I don't think that's the flex that some people think it is. But we are going to retrofit it. And what's interesting is I had one of our subscribers at Gene's page, it's one of these more heated discussions took place and said, hey, I actually work in a company like this. I think this is a doable thing. And I noticed that we're going to contract this out through a Mississippi company. I hope it's the same folks. And I want to commend those that kind of stepped up to make this a reality. You know, we had some donors step up. And, of course, Zach Selman stepped up. And we're fundraising at a much different level these days. You know, that's Zach Selman's background is fundraising. Now, Zach has been criticized for some things, some of it rightfully so, some of it not. You know, some of it's just, you know, the self-loathing segment of our fan base is going to complain about anything. No matter what we do, they're going to find fault in it. So we're going to put a pin in that, okay? But Zach Selman comes from a fundraising background. You've seen all these new gifts and things of that nature. And so, yeah, you go out and get it done. He and I had a discussion some time ago when he talked about really ideally what you'd like to do is like, hey, we need, you know, let's just say an IPF. We need an IPF. So rather than just go borrow some money or go write a check, let's go see if we can't get a gift. Let's see if we can't get somebody to help pay for this and give them the naming rights or whatever. And that's where we start. Rather than just saying, hey, we're going to go write a check for $25 million and then we'll make it up on the back end. You go get somebody to give you a gift, put their name on a building, and that gives you your seed money to get started. And in some situations, they'll just pay for the whole shoot match. That's a better way to do things. Now, one of the things that I want to say too, and this may offend some people, and again, I don't care. There are some people out there that owe Zach Selman an apology. Now, maybe your ego won't allow you to admit it, but the reality of it is there are some people that have just kind of decided, if I don't get what I want, then Zach Selman must be a bad athletic director. If he won't give me what I want, then he must be wrong. You know, maybe you're wrong. Did that ever enter the equation? There were so many people, like, when they didn't get what they wanted, now all of a sudden, well, this guy Zach Selman's been a disappointment. Well, is he a disappointment today? Now that you've got some of what you want? The truth of the matter is this was in the plans all along. It just happened to get out through the university. And it's never something that they've just abandoned. But the reality of it is we were kind of up against it. We did not have, at that point, the ability to do some of the things we wanted to do. And Zach went and made it happen, thanks to some donors. And a lot of that, too, is, you know, we've got some donors out here that would love to give. They just, you know, nobody ever really approached them. It's like we just kind of sit around and wait. You know, I recall some years ago a very heated discussion that I had with somebody, probably maybe 20 years ago, maybe even before that. But it's back when we were with a different company, with Meteorites. And the complaints that we got, because back in those days, not everything was streaming. You didn't have the Varsity app. You didn't have the TuneIn app. We didn't have those things. So we were reliant on radio coverage. And there were some pockets within our home state of Mississippi that you could not get radio coverage of Mississippi State Athletics. And I remember broaching the topic with some people. I said, guys, this has got to get better. If need be, I will get involved and reach out to some donors in these areas where we have pockets where we don't have coverage and see if we can't get some advertisers to help sponsor Mississippi State coverage. And you're like, no, we have the coverage. If they want it, they can call and we will entertain the idea. It absolutely infuriated me because many of you were not able to listen to your favorite team play on the sports because some people involved in that whole process did not have the element of salesmanship. It's true. You walk up to some radio station, you make a meeting, you say, hey, here's the situation. We need somebody to carry Mississippi State football and baseball and basketball in your area. We're going to talk to you and we're going to talk to your competitor. We got some donors down here that are willing to do some advertising dollars. Are you interested? Yes or no? Well, chances are yes. When people see an opportunity to make money, to get more local advertising, to be able to be the exclusive provider of Mississippi State athletics in radio broadcasting within their signal strength, yes, they're going to be interested. Not all of them, but most. And again, we had some people involved in that process. It's just, you know, it's like, well, if they want us, they'll come to us, right? And I think that's kind of been the Mississippi State way at times. And it makes me angry. It's like, well, you know, we just need somebody to come help us. Guys, there's not going to be a search party for them to come save us. We're going to have to go out here and do these things ourselves. And it's one of the things about Selman that's kind of impressed me is like, yeah, he's willing to get on the phone and go have meetings. You know, it's like when we had the whole thing with Zach Arnett, right? We have that debacle on Saturday in College Station. And guys, I love Mississippi State with all that I have within me. And I always say I've never been embarrassed to be a Bulldog. On that day, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed by the performance. I was embarrassed by the lack of preparation. I was embarrassed by Zach Arnett's post-game press conferences. He acted so incredibly unaffected by it all. And the whole way back on Sunday, I'm texting, working the phones, trying to find out if we're going to fire Zach on Sunday. We didn't. We fired him on Monday. And you know why we didn't fire him on Sunday? It's because Zach Selman was in Dallas meeting with some donors, securing some funds. You know, what difference does it make to fire him on Sunday or Monday? But we had a prearranged meeting prior to this debacle at College Station, Texas, because Zach Selman, again, you got to think, too, how long ago that's been now, you know, better part of a year and a half, or right at a year and a half, and he's out there you know, whining and dining some donors to get more money for operating capital for Mississippi State. And so I share that with you because, like, I get it. You know, Zach can't be everywhere. And I know some people are like, hey, I wish he would do this and wish he would do that. And I get it. You know, right now, let's just be honest with one another. And if we can't be honest with each other as Mississippi State people, we can't be honest with anybody else. Guys, football is sick right now. Football is in a weakened condition. And to be honest with you, I think that's where Zach Selman's interest level and focus should be. Because we have to take care of football, because why, kids? Football takes care of everything else. And how many of you, even if you didn't say it, maybe you've thought it, you certainly heard it, at the end of last year, people were like, dude, if they don't fire Coleman Hutzler, I'm out. If they don't make the changes necessary to put a more competitive product on the field next year, I'm out. I'm not even going to renew my season tickets. You all heard that. I heard it probably 100 times. And so now look at what we've done since the end of the Egg Bowl. Well, we bring in Vincent Dancy, because many of you wanted David Turner fired, right? Which I still think is the wrong thing to do. But we needed to have some energy in the room. So we split that up. DT is going to handle the guys with their hands in the ground. Vincent Dancy is going to handle the edge and the outside backers, the jacks. Coleman Hutzler is going to have the other guys. So you get two guys out there that had a real challenging year. And so we brought somebody in. Now we have three coaches instead of two navigating those first two levels of defense. We got 24 commitments from portal prospects along with 27 traditional signees. And then you throw in Jamil Burrows on top of it. That's 52 new Bulldogs this year. And we're not done. And now on top of that, we've addressed the coaching, right? And maybe not to your satisfaction, but we didn't just run it back just as it was. We made some adjustments. We had some offensive line issues last year. I didn't think they were as bad as some people suggested. But we bring in Phil Lodeholt, and it seems like every offensive line guy that I interview these days is like, dude, Phil Lodeholt, what a guy. That guy's been where I want to go. He's a very good guy. You know, so we're getting a lot of positive feedback about Phil. So we've addressed some coaching issues. And then we addressed some roster management issues. You know, we had some guys that we knew weren't going to play here. We encouraged them to leave and go seek playing time elsewhere. Now we only have three of those players that have not found a destination as of now. May have found it this morning. I don't know yet. But we've processed some players out of program, and we replaced them with what we believe are better players. So you address coaching, you address the roster, and now you're addressing some game day stuff. And there's more stuff to come. The sound stuff is still being discussed. Everybody wants to know, does this mean, is it an either-or thing? It's not an either-or thing. We're still doing our due diligence. We're trying to get information and see what's doable. You know, hey, if we had an infinite number of resources, you know, you just go ahead and hire somebody to get it done. But we got to be good stewards of the money. But, yes, there is still discussion about sound, and that's probably the one thing that you guys have known. And Zach has told me before, hey, that's going to get done next year, you know. Now with this new project coming on, I begin to ask myself, is this, you know, going to work in tandem? And so I'm still optimistic that we get the sound issues resolved. And I'll be honest with you, I thought they were worse last year than they ever have been. And I know we did some things to try to correct it. You know, we brought in those big speakers at the end over there. But there were so many times I'm sitting on press row, and I have no idea what the referee's saying. None whatsoever. Zero. And so you turn into somebody else and you have them check live stats and say, what did they call? What did he say? What number was it? And so if it's difficult for us right there at the 50-yard line halfway up to understand what's being said, it's got to be torture for the rest of you guys. It's true. And so I wanted to recap that, but I also wanted to share with you some other things that I think may have flown under the radar just a little bit. Just a little bit. I don't know how much you guys keep up with this, because I know what happens. You know, we're only acutely aware of what happens in Starkville.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, if it happens here, we know about it. If it doesn't happen, and all of a sudden, you know, the Clarion Ledger, somebody writes an article, you know, it becomes a different deal, right? It's true. Now, what's interesting is, and I had this discussion with somebody yesterday, is, you know, everybody now talks about, you know, there's supposed to be a $20.5 million cap for whatever that's worth. You know, I think some of our people are being incredibly naive when it comes to this, you know. And I think there's got to be some enforcement and regulation of that is going to be interesting. And so one of the things that we have had pop up here in recent days is how other schools around the country are beginning to kind of roll their NIL money into a university pot. Maybe you've heard of this. Well, you should, you know. Guys, Mississippi State was about 5 months ahead of the curve. And so now what's happening is people are kind of taking their collectives and they're rolling that money in. And of course, collectives are going to be changing, you know. That's part of the deal too. And in some respects, I think that you know, collectives are going to kind of go back to what they were initially. You know, so right now what we have is pay for play, if I can get it out. But nevertheless, you're seeing news around the country about other people. Hey, we're going to roll our collective funds into kind of like Mississippi State's Excellence Fund. And you don't have to look hard to find articles about that. And so if we were on the other end of that, right, if we were the school that was lagging behind that, let's say Ole Miss was deciding, hey, we're going to roll our collective into this and, you know, we'll still have Walker Jones handle this and negotiate corporate deals and things like that. If they had announced that months ago and we had not, some of our fans would be browbeating the administration to death. And so my question is since we had the vision and the forethought to say, hey, this is where things are headed, let's go ahead and get ahead of the game here, why aren't we praising with the same voice we would be critical with? Now, we'll pause for emphasis' sake. The model that Mississippi State is now using, even though it's been a bit confusing at times, and I think the rollout at times probably left a little bit to be desired, but now I see a lot of people kind of mimicking what we're doing. I'm not saying that, Mississippi State did this, let's do it too. I think there is a collective think tank out there, some people out there that are saying, hey, this is the future. And Mississippi State was one of the first to jump on board with that. Now, how many times in the past at Mississippi State have we not wanted to be the guinea pig? Hey, we'll let somebody else go put their toe in the water, and if it works out, then we'll go jump in. But we're going to jump in the shallow end, and by the time we do, everybody else is lapping us. And so I want to give Zach Selman and his team some credit for that. Even though, again, I know there's some things you got to work out, but it's incredible to think how big a deal NIL and rev share and all that's going to be, that Mississippi State was kind of on the forefront. And again, there's still some nuances of all that I don't fully understand. And I've actually requested a meeting with some people to try to get more information. And I think right now people are just kind of reluctant to go on record about all this until they get all their ducks in a row. But it reminds me of a time in my life where it always felt like we were playing catch up. I talked to an administrator a longtime state administrator that didn't come in with Zach Selman, somebody that has been here for a while. And I just point blank asked him, I said, hey, how do you see this thing working out for us? And he goes, you know, I think we're going to be okay. And, of course, anytime there's change, there are people that get involved and have very dissenting opinions because the new guy is always right in the minds of some people and always wrong in the minds of others. But I think when you see other people kind of going along with what we did, it kind of makes you realize, hey, this may be the right way to go. And I'm glad that we were able to get out in front of it. Because, you know, like we had, and again, I talk about this NIL stuff because people have a revisionist history. You may recall when NIL first came out that the schools could not be involved whatsoever. Period. They couldn't be. Now, of course, people, well, you know, we can, no, couldn't be. You could not be involved. You couldn't advertise for a collective. You couldn't social media promote a collective. You could do anything like that. And then, like, well, we had the interim AD, Bracky Brett. As soon as, like, Bracky comes aboard, the NCAA clears the path. The schools can be involved. And then all of a sudden, Bracky basically sends out an endorsement of the Bulldog Initiative, right? And so people are like, hey, why hadn't we been doing this? Well, it wasn't legal before. And it's so funny, the same people that think, well, we should have been doing that, are the same people that think this $20.5 million cap, the rev share, is going to be a hard cap. It's funny to me. It is. Think for yourselves. The same people that wanted us to go ahead and go against NCAA rules and regulations on NIL in its infancy are the same people that think, well, you know, the cap's the cap. You kidding me? So you thought it'd be okay to skirt the rules then, but you don't think people are going to skirt them now? Give me a break. Where you been? How old are you? You wet behind the ears? Come on. My concern with this rev share thing, as I shared recently, is I think it's going to introduce even more dark money that has never gone away because you're going to have players holding you hostage and you don't want to lose guys and you think, hey, there's no salary cap room for us to work with. So what's going to happen? You're going to have somebody go out there and supplement. And my thing is you can use the legal vehicle of the NIL to get that done. But that's not what's going to happen. I'm not naive. I'm not some Pollyanna that believes that everybody plays by the rules because I know better. I know better. You know, all of a sudden, you know, somebody makes a blog post and we think, well, you know, that's how things are going to be. And remember some of those same people that were making those blog posts and all these op-ed pieces, remember all that stuff? They were the same ones that have been telling you for, what, 4 years now that we're going to a nine-game SEC schedule and it still hadn't happened. It may happen eventually. It hadn't happened every single year. Every time it comes from a vote, oh, there's widespread support for the nine. Guys, the vote wasn't even close when the SEC presidents got together. Wasn't even close to passing. But according to all of the, you know, the pundits, then it gets voted down and everybody's shocked. Well, why are you shocked? You didn't have good sourcing. And again, it's incredible how it all works. And so I just encourage you, just because somebody writes an article out there and says, hey, this is what we're hearing, this is how we expect things to go, doesn't mean that's how things are going to go. And you know, this house settlement thing still has not been voted on. I think it's April. When that's supposed to happen. Supposed to vote in April, and the rev share starts in July. And think about all the commitments that have been made to college football players all around the country. And you begin to think about this aspect of it. What if there is another delay? Are you going to have guys sitting out workouts? Say, no, I'm not doing this. They promised me this. They have to deliver this. Because rev share is still not finally approved. So that's the question you begin to ask yourself. You know, I think things will work out. But we have, if anything that we've learned in the last few years is we got to be prepared for anything. Are you going to have a stoppage around the country? You're going to have a unionization of college athletes and football that has decided, hey, the rev share check is supposed to start on July 1st. We don't care about the house settlement. We just want our money. And so we're not going to go to workouts. We're not going to go to class until this is resolved. And if you don't think that won't happen, you're kidding yourself. You're absolutely kidding yourself. It's almost like the bizarro world in which we live. Like anything that can happen is going to happen. It's just like this Title IX thing we're talking about now with RevShare. The Department of Ed opinion that RevShare should be treated the same way as scholarship opportunities. That it should be even between men and women. It's going to be an interesting discussion. And it's like every time that we think, okay, this is how things are going to go, then somebody else comes up and says, no, that's not right. That's not right. You know, we got to do this too. And then there's another lawsuit and another lawsuit and another lawsuit. And it's, you know, it's just like I think about as soon as we got the a tentative agreement on the house settlement for all those players from that one particular era. And I told some people at Mississippi State, I goes, this is not going to stop the lawsuits. Oh, yeah, it's just this group. I said, no, it's not. Because as soon as precedent is established, then the next group, the older group, is going to go. And then the older group, and then the older group. And until we get all the way back to we didn't have TV commercials on billboards and, you know, we didn't use, we used cartoon schedules. You know, we didn't have an actual name or image or likeness of a player. Remember years ago, like there would be like a nondescript player on a schedule that's like a cartoon version? We may have to go all the way back to that and pay everybody else that's involved. And one of the things that I think about too, and I'm sure I'm helping out some young enterprising lawyer here. You know, do you remember the cheerleaders and the people like that that we used to put like on the billboards to sell tickets or whatever, you know? They weren't student athletes, but did we not use their image and likeness to advertise for Mississippi State? Was that handled properly? Did we get everybody to sign a non-disclosure agreement? Did we get everybody to sign a contract kind of signing over the use of their image? You know, I remember back in those days, people were just overjoyed. And please, can you believe Mississippi State used Joey's picture? Wasn't that great? How great is that? Do we have our former Miss Mississippi's come back now? Because remember, we had the, we had the Miss Mississippi, This Is Our State billboards. You know, we used their image and likeness. Are they not entitled to compensation? You know, where does this thing end? I just hope we can get back to playing ball. That's really all I want, is I want everybody treated fairly. I want us all to play ball. And I think at the end of the day, we're all going to have different definitions of what we think is fair. All right, time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is our friend in the mortgage industry. They don't tell you when you're young that you're going to need a reputable, efficient, and professional mortgage loan originator. If the dream of home ownership has eluded you, let me encourage you to give Blair Chandler a try. He can get you pre-qualified, which will save you and your real estate agent a lot of time and trouble. You'll know exactly what you're looking for. You don't want to be shopping above your means. But when you're starting out in life, you need to build a relationship with somebody that's got some expertise and know-how. That's Blair Chandler, 24 years of experience. If you need a real estate agent, he can recommend one for you as well. But the reality of it is that Blair is one of us. He rides the wave of Mississippi State emotion just like the rest of us. He's a place here in town, a season ticket holder, multiple sports. His phone number, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair, not a call center, not a receptionist, directly to Blair. Be sure and hit him up. Let him know you heard about him on the Boneyard. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed a loan with Blair. Get him to work for you, whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home. Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay. Sad news in the world of rock this week is John Sykes passes away. Many of you are like, Steve, I don't know John Sykes. Well, you know his music. And it's kind of a shame the way things went down, to be honest with you. John Sykes was originally with a band called Street Fighter, eventually landed with Thin Lizzy and Phil Einett. And so the reality of it is that he has been involved with some bands and came close to being part of some other bands that you know well. He left Thin Lizzy to try out for Ozzy after Randy Rhoads died. Ultimately didn't get the gig. Jackie Lee did. Then he landed with Whitesnake. On the American version of Slide It In, John Sykes played guitar. And if you listen, you can find the UK version online. The American version is better. It typically is. And then of all the great songs, nine of the songs on the self-titled album that many people refer to as the 1987 Whitesnake album, it was John Sykes doing the playing. Now, John got fired right after the album was recorded and before all these MTV clips and that kind of stuff. Adrian Vandenberg replaced John Sykes in the band. Adrian Vandenberg also had a bout with tendonitis when they were recording the Slip of the Tongue. Steve Vai played both parts. So Adrian helped write some of those, but it was Vai doing most of the playing. So Adrian Vandenberg on those very two classic Whitesnake albums, even though in some respects he was the face of Whitesnake. And the classic lineup, at least from the American version, of course, you know, Adrian Vandenberg in all the videos, Vivian Campbell, of course, Rudy Sarzo, Tommy Aldridge, the great Tommy Aldridge, which reminds me, tomorrow night I'm going to the Max Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Wish Tommy was going in this year. He's not. But Shelby Foote is. And so John Sykes played on those great albums, and then after he left Whitesnake, he was given the opportunity to put his own band together with Tony Franklin and Carmen Appice called Blue Murder. They did a couple of albums. They did one final live album in memory of Phil Lynott. And for a while there, you know, John fronted a different version of Thin Lizzy after Phil's death. So you're familiar with John, but maybe you didn't know his name. And those of us that are big rockers, we understand that that classic Whitesnake album was not visually represented in the MTV videos with Tony Katane, God rest her soul. So I put together a top 10 list. I had multiple people hit me up and say, Steve, can we do a John Sykes or a Whitesnake list? We're going to do John because I want to honor him because before he was with Thin Lizzy, he was with a great band called Tigers of Pantang. A couple of albums with them. Our number 10 track is Silver and Gold from Tigers of Pantang. That's Tigers with a Y to make it even cooler. Number 9, also from Tigers of Pantang, the second and final album that John Sykes is a part of, is Love Don't Stay. You're going to hear some elements of the future Whitesnake experience on this track. Some of the chording is similar. The picking is similar. There's just a lot to it that John Sykes kind of had his own style. Then he goes and joins Thin Lizzy. Had the big single, Cold Sweat. Of course, by this time, Thin Lizzy was changing. This is the final album with Thin, of course, as Phil died. But the track Cold Sweat was written by Phil and John Sykes. They also had a couple of songs they did together kind of outside of Thin Lizzy. But it's more of a rocking version than the songs you know, which I always loved Thin Lizzy. I did. We still play the Boys Are Back in Town. Okay, so the rest of the seven tracks are all Whitesnake stuff, off either Slide It In or the 87 album. And so we're going to go number 7. I absolutely love this track. The video was great. And for many of you, the song rings true. It's Love Ain't No Stranger. I think David's vocal stylings on this are just tremendous. Okay, number 6. And one of the reasons this is lower, even though it's probably one of your favorite Whitesnake songs, there were two tracks on the 87 Whitesnake album that were actually remakes of earlier Whitesnake tracks. I think Crying in the Rain was on Saints and Sinners. But it's Here I Go Again. You know, and so it's a little different version. But it's the one you know. And also, too, I mean, really the kind of the lead on this was the keys, right? I mean, like, that's what kind of sets it apart. And it's like, it's so interesting too. Like, I've been on some radio interviews, and I kind of quote David Coverdale when they asked me, what have you been up to? I said, been living on the promises and the songs of yesterday. That's me. All right, number five. I think the guitar on this is absolutely incredible. It's a power ballad. And it's one of those songs, too, that there were so many people that I remember a particular televangelist taking issue with this video. It's Tawny Kitaen is kind of dancing around the bed, and Dave Coverdale's in there. And the name of the song is This Love. And he goes, oh, it's not love, it's lust. Well, unbeknownst to that preacher, they were married, Tawny and David. But the guitar solo on this, to me, is just sublime. I think John absolutely nails this. And I don't know that this song gets enough notoriety. Everybody knows, you know, the big hits. This was a huge hit, too. And I think David Coverdale, to this day, is one of the coolest guys on the planet, even though he's about to stop touring. Not going to retire. Just going to retire from touring. But Is This Love is one of those songs, too, that we've all experienced. And David's a great songwriter. Number four, my favorite song off of Slide It In. I absolutely love this, man. And if I had the pipes, I'd cover it. But it's Slow and Easy. It's one of those get up and clap songs, right? And if you've ever seen Whitesnake perform this live, you know exactly. It is one of the high points of the show. Because, you know, it builds, you know, with that blues riff in the beginning, and people recognize it right away, and the crowd lights up. And then by the time the drums kick in, people are just clapping along because you know the song. And this song really isn't about love. It really is more about lust. You know, take me down, slow and easy. Make love to me, slow and easy. All right, number three, one of my favorites from Whitesnake from any album. And I love the video, and I love the fact, too, like the album had already had so many huge hits, right? And so they released this basically as the final single. And I don't know how many records this thing sold after this single came out, but all told, the 87 album sold 8 million copies in America alone. Nuts, man. And people forget, like they were the opening act on the Girls, Girls, Girls tour, Whitesnake-wise. Of course, you know, Dave kind of came to America to reinvent himself. You know, they were trying to conquer America, and the way he did, he moved in and lives out at Lake Tahoe now, still an American. But it's Give Me All Your Love. And if you've ever seen Tommy Aldridge on stage playing this one, it'll give you some respect. The guy's in his 70s, man, and still doing it at such a high level. Number two. This is the first single off the Blue Murder self-titled album. And or maybe it's the second one. Yeah, the first one was Valley of the Kings, now that I think about it. This was the second single. And it starts out, and it's so, like, happy. And the video on this is incredible, too. But basically, you know, John Sykes is in love with this girl, and things are going great. So you've got this. He's got a 12-string guitar, but he's playing it like a 6-string. There's a lot of strumming involved. And the relationship goes bad. And then that's when the full band kind of kicks in and it goes over to being like an electric player. And it's a song called Jelly Roll. And at the end of it, you know, it's like only love can break your heart. No words can ever say how much I miss you. It's an agonizing song. And again, you watch the video, kind of it all ends well. But you want to see John Sykes in his majestic glory, watch that video. All the hair, the clothes, it's incredible. But number one, and I love to get the, I've gotten a couple of these Whitesnake box sets, because I'm a Whitesnake fan. And one of the things that I love, and you can find some of this commentary, like if you go and like listen to the self-titled album or Slip of the Tongue, there is the David Coverdale commentary. He talks a little bit about, you know, the creation of these songs. And one of the things that David discussed is he had the idea for our number one song. And you guys know from Landon Sims, Still the Night. And no, it's not the ballad. But basically, John was given this idea because David Coverdale said the Jailhouse Rock is one of his favorite rock songs of all time, and he wanted a song that had that kind of staccato in it. And he had kind of hummed it out and played like a portion of a riff, and he goes and gives it to John Sykes. And John Sykes basically comes up with what became Still of the Night in one take. He took David's idea, went to work, and then when you think about the intro to that and how it builds and that hammer-on, and then right before the vocal comes in, it's just majesty. I absolutely love the song. I have for a long time. I still jam it regularly. I'm a Whitesnake freak. It's true. I got a Whitesnake purple tour shirt somewhere around here. One of my girls borrowed it. I don't know where it is now. But I got to find it. I'd like to put it back in the rotation of my, 200 rock shirts. But John Sykes, again, an incredible talent that made a lot of people extremely wealthy. And what's interesting, you know, John and David never really kind of reconciled. There was some discussions in the early 2000s about bringing John back to Whitesnake because of the winning formula. It's like they had done so many great things together. And there were a lot of people that were hoping that would happen, and it didn't work out. And John was also kind of bitter because he didn't think that Blue Murder got promoted enough because they were label mates with Whitesnake, which made it a tidy undertaking for the record label. Hey, we'll keep John Sykes, the guy that was the musical mastermind behind these great albums with Whitesnake. But they didn't promote the album because the belief was is they eventually wanted John to get back with Whitesnake. And so, incredible talent, and it's so incredible that he almost got the gig in Def Leppard after Steve Clark died. He almost got the gig with Ozzy after Randy Rhoads died. And of course, Thin Lizzy was kind of taken off for its kind of second breath when Phil Lynott died. And so John has been one of these kinds of people that's bounced around a little bit. But when you listen to that 87 album, it's not Adrian Vandenberg and Vivian Campbell. It's John Sykes putting those things together. You know, that's the important aspect of all of this. It was John Sykes. So that's our top 10 list for today. Please reach out to Roy on Twitter at Dogmatic67. That's DAWGMATIC67. And on X. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. And thanks as always for your support of the top 10 list. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I have loved Campus Bookmart for a long time because they have the things that I want to buy. And they have the things you want to buy too. And for every Mississippi State fan in your life, it's you to have a gift, need, buying opportunity, you should peruse their fine selections when you're in town. Give yourself a little time early to go by and shop on game day. Neatly positioned on the backside of campus, very easy to get into, to get in and out of. And if you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, since we have been together, the Mississippi State Bulldogs dropped the game to Tennessee. It was not a very entertaining game to watch for us. Probably the silver lining is maybe we got Josh Hubbard going a little bit. But, man, this game got away from us early. But, you know, you look up and you think, man, we're actually playing good defense. We're getting some stops. If we have an opportunity, you know, to kind of mount a little offense here, we can make this thing interesting. That's how it felt. But, man, before we even got comfortable, it's 8-0. Kugel hits a three and think, okay, well, the lid has been lifted. We'll get going here. Things will be okay. But that just really wasn't the case. Wasn't the case at all. And next thing you know, it's 17-6, right around the 11-minute mark. And we just couldn't find – everything on offense was just a struggle for us. They even stretch it out to 19-6. And then we cut it to 10 on a hub three. And again, you think, you know, if we could just find some way to get it going here. But it just felt like there was no semblance of any rhythm on offense for us for much of that first half. It just really, really felt like we were outclassed. And I hate to say it that way, but that's the reality. We do cut it to 9 under the 4-minute mark, and we actually get the ball back and have an opportunity to take it down to 7. Well, we don't, and then give up a 3. They take it right back out to 12. What a big swing that proved to be. Because you feel like, man, if you can get it to 7, maybe you can get into the halftime locker room, you know, under 10. But instead, it's an 18-point deficit at the break, 34-16, and it really felt like that the script was written. I almost wish we could have got on a plane and come on home right then and there. But we do get some things going a little bit late. Josh Hubbard does get going. We do cut it to 10 on a Claudell Harris 3 to make it 34-24. But it you can't trade baskets. We just could never seem to kind of make it up. It's kind of part of the deal. Melendez 3 cuts it down to 9 right there at the 16-minute mark. And we kind of hung around and hung around, but it never felt like we were going to strike and make a real game of this thing. And eventually they wear us down, take it back out to 14. And from there, I don't want to say they coasted, because they did play hard. They did play hard. We made them play pretty well. But they take it out to 18 points. And from there, it was just, a matter of what the final score was going to be. I mean, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. The details don't matter. We lost to a better team on the road in the Southeastern Conference. And the good news is the schedule begins to kind of lighten up a little bit. Before we look at that, though, let's take a quick look at our box score here. As the final score, State loses by a dozen, 68-56. But it felt worse than that. I'm sure you guys probably have the same assessment that I do, even though we won the second half by 6. We just dug too big a hole early on. Hub with 14 points, 4 of 12 from beyond the arc. Something still not quite right with Josh Hubbard. Now, some of that the league is aware of him, but you would think with some alternative scorers out there, we'd be able to get more open looks. But he's been in a bit of a funk for a while. R.J. Melendez with 10 points. Claudio Harris with just 8. Cam Matthews, was a marathon man for us in the game against Ole Miss and only has 2 points. Against Tennessee. And in order for us to beat a team the quality of Tennessee, we're going to need big games from Cam Matthews. We got a couple last year, not so much this time. Michael Nwoko, just the 1 point there. So not much moving in the front court for State. Just 3 points from the starters. Now, Riley Kugel comes off the bench, gets a dozen points. Emerging is one of our best players. Part of the deal. But it's behind us now. And when, you think about, we got – a little bit of a break, I guess, the first week of the schedule. But you knew this stretch was coming. And this is perhaps the most difficult stretch on our schedule. Now, there's room to improve, certainly. And there's some lessons that you can learn. But we've played number 6 Kentucky at home, number 1 Auburn on the road, number 121 Ole Miss at home, and then number 6 Tennessee on the road. It's not going to be that way the rest of the way. As it stands right now, everybody else on the remaining regular season slate is an unranked team. And, of course, playing Alabama is going to be difficult. We've taken some good teams to Alabama over the years. We do have a home-and-home with them this year. But you start working through this, and you begin to kind of realize – we have probably gone through the most difficult stretch that we're going to face until we get to the NCAA tournament. So I expect State to kind of go on a run here. Now, we're going to play South Carolina again on Saturday. That's at Columbia. And I think that ended up being a good home and home for us. But when I start thinking about, the teams that we have played and lost to, these are teams that are Final Four teams. Certainly have that type of potential. I think we all kind of see it for what it is. Let's take a quick look at the SEC men's standings. So we have played the number 1 team, Auburn. We do have a home-and-home coming up with Alabama. They're 5-1 in conference. No joke. Ole Miss, we've beaten them, obviously. They're 4-1, and Tennessee beats us 4-2. And so you've already played 3 of the top 4 teams, plus Kentucky. Missouri is 4-2. Florida is 3-2. not a real big deal to us. Texas A&M's 3-2. We're 3-3. Vandy's 3-3. Georgia 2-3. Texas 2-4. Had a win last night. Oklahoma's 1-4. LSU 1-4. Arkansas and South Carolina 0-5. So we have a chance here, again, to go on a pretty good run. You play the last place team in the league this weekend. You have a really good Alabama team coming to Starkville on Wednesday. Missouri, middle of the pack team, too, will be at Starkville. You like the way that sounds. Going to Georgia's never a picnic. They're not great, but they're good. Florida comes here. You go to Ole Miss, that'll be an absolute war. Texas A&M, second half of the league, they're going to come here. Oklahoma, bottom half of the league, they're going to come here. We're going to go there, pardon me, and then Alabama and LSU, Texas and Arkansas. So, again, Alabama, I don't know why they don't have a number next to their name on this report, but the reality of it is I think we have played the most difficult stretch of our men's basketball schedule. And I look for us to make a big run here down the stretch. And again, a lot of these toss-up games are at home, and we have some road games that I believe are winnable. And so that's a cool thing too, you know. And so in no way is it time to give up on this season. We can still very much be an NCAA tournament team and win a game or two in the tournament. I still think we're a Sweet 16 team, even though we didn't play like it last night. And I know what happens. We get the recency bias, right? You beat Ole Miss and you start thinking, hey, maybe we go to Tennessee and play. And then we don't. And it's not a good matchup for us. These things that are big and long and athletic are going to give us trouble. It's just kind of how it is. But we have played some of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference, and things will begin to kind of ease up for us just a little bit here in the next few weeks. And so it's a game-to-game deal. We have a great coach. We have a great team. We just haven't had great results the last couple, two of the last three ball games. It is what it is. And again, we didn't expect this team to win the SEC championship. We expected them to be an NCAA tournament team and have a real chance to get out of the first weekend. And all of that still exists. I think it's all not only possible, but I think it's probable. But we do need to get Hub going. We do. I think it's important, too, like when you start thinking about, the complexity of the schedule. Beating Ole Miss keeps people engaged, not just because it's an Ole Miss game, but you know as well as I do, we have so many people that the rivalry plays out every single day. You lose that game, you'd have people packing it in, even if you have gone on the road and beaten Tennessee. Because there's so many of our fans that are just casual basketball fans, they wouldn't really understand the gravity of that. And you say, hey, it's number six Tennessee. But you beat Ole Miss, and then you lose to Tennessee, so you feel like, hey, you won the game you were supposed to win, you lost the game you were supposed to lose. And I know that doesn't make that loss feel any better, but it was a better team. We got beat by a better team. And Chris Jans is such a great coach. We'll learn from that. I mean, how many times in the Chris Jans experience have we taken a floor and just not looked like we knew what we were doing? Last night felt that way. And Rick Barnes, after we beat them twice last year, they were not just going to let us show up at Thompson Bowling and just kind of have our way with them. We were going to have their attention, not to mention they lost to Vanderbilt. So in many ways, it was kind of a storm brewing that Mississippi State was going to have to face. And so we did. It's behind us. Now let's go win some basketball games. But again, I encourage you, believe in this team, believe in this coaching staff. There's some big things to come. We're going to be a tournament team. I'll be shocked if we're not. It probably means we've had a dramatic injury somewhere. But we are a good enough team, especially at home, in these toss-up games. I don't think anybody looks forward to coming and playing us. Honest to goodness. And a lot of that is because of you. So we need to keep packing out the house. We need to keep a home court advantage for our players. And we need to keep believing the good things are belong to us. The good things, we need good things to happen to us, and we're entitled to good things. And I think all of us would agree this is the best roster that Chris Jans has assembled. And he will get the most out of them. I have no question about that. I'm expecting some big things from this team. But we knew when the schedule first came out that this stretch right here in the middle of January was going to be tough. Well, it proved to be. And now it's time to pick it up and get going again. The Mississippi State ladies They will be in action again here soon, as you guys are well aware. The Sam Purcell presser was today. We make all that big room stuff free over at jeanspage.com. So if it's a press conference, you can read the transcription, kind of read our take on things. All that's free. All the big room stuff is free. You can watch a press conference video for free. If it's not premium content, we don't make it VIP. We're not going to make you pay for something that everybody else has. Bulldogs back in action Thursday night against Auburn. And, of course, you know, Johnny Harris, right? We love Johnny. And she had a really good year last year. Things have not gone well this year. And this is, again, Mississippi State absolutely has to win. Without any question, this is a must-win game. And of course, losing to Ole Miss is never a fun thing, especially on our home floor. But that's the reality of where we sit right now. Now, Auburn, 1-5 in the league, and they've won one game in a row, but they're 10-9 overall. There are only two teams kind of behind them in the standings. Georgia's even with them, but they're a 9-11 team. And then there's Missouri, 0-6, 11-10. And so let's just kind of take a quick look at the Auburn Tigers women and kind of see how they got here and kind of get you prepped for tomorrow night's game. I don't know what time you're listening to the show, probably Thursday morning. But, this is a game we simply have to have. And I know that our students will turn out and be a part of this. You know, we can't complain about our students. I can tell you that. I appreciate our students turning out and supporting us. Now, football, I get tired of them leaving a little bit early, but there hadn't been enough reason to hang around at times this past year. But, the Auburn women, again, 10-9 overall, 1-5 in the Southeastern Conference, 6-4 at home, 2-4 in true road games, and 2-1 on neutral floor. So 3-5 in games away from Neville Arena. They open up with a win over Southern Illinois. They get Virginia University at Lynchburg by 92 points. And to be fair to those ladies at Virginia University of Lynchburg, we could probably pull five kids out of the stands and be competitive in a ballgame. They get Little Rock, 82-48. They lose at number 23, Oregon, by two. And you think, hey, that's a quality loss. You know, you get out of the gate here with a 3-0 start, and you go on the road and play a quality team like Oregon, a team that we've played in some very important NCAA tournament games, and you go to Eugene and drop by two, you feel like, hey, well, maybe we're okay. Well, then they get beat by four at Cal, and anytime you got to go east to west, it's kind of a tough thing. They get back home. They play in the Paradise Jam in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, play a three-game set down there. They beat Northern Iowa by one. That's probably cause for concern. They get Pitt, though, 32, 82-15. You feel like, hey, maybe we're a better team than we thought. And they lose by one in the championship game, 61-60. So pretty good run out there at the Paradise Jam. You go 2-1 and lose by a single solitary point. And then you go on the road to play Virginia in Charlottesville, and you win by nine. Come home, you get UAB. You win that game by seven. You beat Louisiana. So you've put together an nice little run here. Of course, Alabama State comes in. You expect to win that game. They win by 43. And then kind of craziness, they lose at home to Norfolk State in the final non-conference game of the year. Not sure of all the details surrounding that, but you'd expect to win that game if you're an SEC team. They get into SEC play, and things just absolutely fall apart. Again, there was some false confidence, I guess. But again, it's not like they just played – Louisiana College in a non-conference. Again, you mentioned Oregon, Cal, Kansas. I mean, they played some Power 5 teams, so they should have had a pretty good idea of how they would measure up against some of their SEC contemporaries. Well, they get drilled at home by Ole Miss, 85-58. They lose at LSU, and again, remember, Auburn gave LSU all kinds of trouble last year. And maybe Johnny just has got some things figured out with Kim Mulkey, but they lose the game at the Maravich Assembly Center by 10. It was a competitive game, though. Arkansas goes in and wins by one. And again, Arkansas has not been good this year. But again, you just kind of hang around here and thinking, you know what, maybe we'll just kind of get things working here. But you're 0-3, headed to Kentucky, and you lose the Memorial Coliseum by 19. And then Texas comes in and Neville and beats you by 17. And so finally, on Sunday, you beat Missouri, the last place team in the league, by 15. And at this point, you don't care if it's Missouri or whoever. You're just happy to kind of get the lid lifted off of SEC play. But again, you open up, it's brutal. Now you got to come and play Mississippi State, and then on Sunday you're back home against Florida. So this is a game we absolutely have to win. Let's look a little bit inside the numbers here to see who we need to account for. Do our advanced scouting here on the Boneyard. But it's so interesting to me, the way roster dynamics change from year to year, especially in basketball. We on the football side, things have been interesting for us. But, ideally you wouldn't have this much turnover, but we're trying to get the roster back where it needs to be. The Tigers averaging just under 70 points a game, 69.7. It's always nice. Giving up 59, so outscoring opponents by just over 10 points a game. And again, even in non-conference, I mean, those games were competitive. So they're not going to be, worried about a close ball game. They've played in a lot of them. Shooting 45% from the field, allowing 40. Three-point basket, shooting 33%, allowing 30. But it's just, about four threes a game. It's not like that they have been a perimeter team by trade. Shooting right at 68% from the line. Out-rebounded opponents by about four. Dishing out 14 assists per game, allowing just over nine. They have turned it over a lot, though, 316 times, so right at 17 per game. They're forcing about 21 per game, so nearly 400 turnovers by their opponents. 185 steals against 151, 69 blocks, nice, against 52. And so those are your team numbers. Now, kind of getting a little more involved here. Deanna Gaston, 21.4 points, has played in all 18 games. Not really a three-point shooter, but leads a team with 273 shot attempts. Also has 24 blocks, 22 steals, a lot of personal fouls too, pulling down about 7 and 8 rebounds a game. Talia Scott is second on the team, 20.3 points a game, and only just kind of getting back in the mix here, but just three games for her. It's interesting that somebody that's that prolific in the scoring hasn't played a whole lot. Yeah, there's some injuries involved there for sure, one would think. But, she's played a little bit, but had a bit of a back injury and then had a family emergency. So she's had some things that have kind of taken her out of contention here, and didn't play against LSU either. So some things going on with her. Again, just three games, but has been a prolific scorer. Not what you'd expect. You bring in a new transfer, and especially somebody that lights it up like that, and you feel like, hey, we've really found something. Taylor Collins with 8.8 points a game. Celia Sumbane with 8.3. Caitlin Duhon with 7.3. Pretty balanced scoring once you get through the first couple there. But, as a team, again, they'll put the ball up from three-point, but it's really not a ton of those. Audia Young leads the team with 65 attempts. She's made 24 times. But outside of that, there hasn't been a ton. They're just kind of opportunistic as it goes. So expecting State to win this game, expecting to be a very partisan crowd. I know many of you love Johnny Harris, and you always will, and you're appreciative for her contributions to Mississippi State when she was the lead assistant under Vic Schaefer. But, she's at Auburn, and we wish her the best when she's not playing us, We'd love for us to win the ball game, and then all of a sudden they get hot and go run some interference for us. But, it's just kind of how life works. No hard feelings about Johnny. She was a finalist for the job, and we ultimately hired Nikki McRae-Pinson, and people were like, hey, we should have hired Johnny. Well, I think when you look now at what's happened at Auburn, we might be in the same position that we're in now. It's a difficult task to go from being the lead assistant to being a head coach in a Power 5 conference. It just is. And that's not necessarily a criticism of her. Probably the best course of action would have been to take a G5 job somewhere and kind of learn how to run the show and then come back. But, again, very appreciative of her contributions. I know all of you feel the same way that I do. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, whether it be a work group, a friend group, a family group, whatever group you bring in, six bedrooms, two soon to be three baths. It's an incredible place. I've stayed there for a couple nights myself. Great living quarters, full service kitchen, the wet bar, that amazing back porch area, the fire pit area, we put that to good use too. But it's just so nice to have everybody together instead of having everybody scattered around. You know what I mean? And it's so nice to just to go to a great place that people aren't quite as familiar with. And so it feels like you're taking a big trip, even if you're not. You know, if you've been to Starkville a million times, it'd be cool to have a place like this, just 5 minutes from the Mississippi State campus. So close to all of your campus favorites, but kind of tucked away where you have some peace and quiet. Super great place to stay. You'll have a great time there. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will auto-populate, and you'll have an opportunity to look at the pictures and peruse the amenities available to you and your guest. In addition to that, there are going to be some booking options that pop up. You can go Airbnb, VRBO if you want to. Maybe that's up to you. Maybe you've got a credit with them that you need to use. You can use it there. You can apply it. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's beautiful Steve Robertson and the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. You'll be glad you did. And I just think so many times how great it is, how great it is to have a venue like that when we can have everybody together under one roof. All right, looking ahead to a little baseball, you know, we'll have some media opportunities with baseball later in the week. And as we start getting ready to get into our preseason scrimmage, you know, I'm excited about that. You know, hope springs eternal this time of year. Everybody thinks that they're going to make it into a regional somewhere. I expect us to host. I will be disappointed if we don't. You know, of course, every season is basically judged by, you know, what you do in the end. You know, but we need to play our way into hosting, not just the hosting discussion like last year. And, of course, we would have hosted if we'd not had all those quad four losses. I go back and think about that 10 a.m. game against Central Arkansas, and it wakes me up in a cold sweat. It's amazing. If we just won, we almost came back and won that game. It should have never been close. But the reality of it is that it's going to be an interesting opening weekend. We're going to talk about some of this stuff as we get a bit closer. But I was just curious, you know, because people are like, hey, Steve, we're playing the Manhattan Jaspers. I mean, come on. But I wanted to kind of frame it up and give you some context here. So here's who everybody else is playing. Georgia is going to have Quinnipiac, and it's fun to say it. We played them a few years ago here in Duty Noble. Quinnipiac, three-game set. LSU going to host one of the worst teams in Division I baseball, Purdue Fort Wayne. Be a great experience for those kids from Purdue Fort Wayne. Sacred Heart will be at South Carolina. And Sacred Heart's one of those teams, every once in a while they make a bit of a run. They find their way as the number four into the tournament. Washington State's going to beat Arkansas. So, hey, you know, Power Five right out of the gate. I don't know if you know a whole lot about Washington State baseball, but interesting. Missouri is going to be at Penn State. You know, what do you know about that, right? I mean, usually everybody in the north comes south, but and let me just double check to make sure this isn't like some anomaly in the schedule, like maybe there's a problem in the data flow, but we'll double check here. But yeah, Penn State gonna host they're playing Missouri. I didn't make a lot of sense to me. They're going to be in Puerto Rico. Yeah, they're going to be down there in Puerto Rico to play as the Puerto Rico Challenge. So it's one of these traveling tournaments. So there you go. So, yeah, that'd be fun in February. I was just sitting there thinking, why in the world do you go to Penn State and play in February? It makes no sense whatsoever. They're going to play in Caguas, Puerto Rico. Yeah, so good stuff there. So Missouri will be out there. That'll be fun for them. And so Lehigh will play at Oklahoma, Kentucky at Lipscomb. Yeah, that's part of the deal. Yeah. I mean, it's like you think about building an RPI And you go play a road team like that? I don't know how I feel about that, but Nick is kind of the RPI guru. Bradley's at Alabama. Elon is at Texas A&M. That's not Elon Musk. That's Elon of North Carolina. Texas is going to be in this little deal with Ole Miss, the Shriners Classic. That's going to take place in Arlington, Texas. You got Arizona, Texas, Clemson. Got a handful of teams in there, Ole Miss. So Texas takes on Louisville in the opener. Vanderbilt is at Grand Canyon. I think, you know, that's a good RPI climber right there. Air Force is at Florida. Hofstra is at Tennessee. Of course, the Jaspers of Manhattan are here. Holy Cross is at Auburn. And so kind of digging down here, looking, you know, these other, you know, the teams are going to play the multi-weekend things. Missouri's going to get UConn in game two. Ole Miss gets Texas in game two. I missed it here in game one. Ole Miss gets Arizona, the defending Pac-12 champions, in game one. Then they get Texas, be a non-conference affair. And then, you know, roll a little bit deeper here. Ole Miss will get Clemson, and Texas gets Oklahoma State. And look at Oklahoma State playing a lot of this stuff. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, again, the first three games for Ole Miss in Arlington, Arizona, Texas, and Clemson. Could be a tough opening weekend for them, for sure. And you know, I don't know how good Texas is going to be honest with you. I know some people are all hype about them because Slosh is there. And I know he's a guy that, like, gives a lot of information. And, you know, had a good run at TCU, took Texas A&M to the precipice of a NAFL championship last year. And they couldn't win game three. And then they leaves and goes to Texas. You know, that we forget about all the drama that was associated with that last year. But it's just so interesting to me. Like, Texas was not a great team last year. People forget that. It's like, so, you know, what are you going to do in year one? It's not like Slosh is just going to show up and then everything changes. It takes a while. It took a while at A&M. Right? I mean, they won right away, but as far as, like, being nationally elite, I mean, last year the Longhorns were 36-24. So you finish 12 games over 500, and then you get eliminated from the NCAA tournament in an 11-inning loss to A&M, and then you lose 10-2 to University of Louisiana. Not great. Not great. Final two games of the year. A combined 20 innings played, you scored four runs. Not a great team. And I understand they had a few guys coming out of the portal. They didn't hit it wide open. But I don't know how. I'm glad we're getting them early, you know. But kind of looking at them, again, they open up in that Shriners thing at Globe Life, Louisville, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma State. You know, we'll see. You know, Oklahoma State obviously was a really good team last year. I think Oklahoma State's one of the top 15 baseball programs of all time. And they're constantly in the discussion, right, for hosting. You know, they never seem to quite get there, to get over the hump. But this is going to be an interesting weekend. And probably, you know, I don't know who's going to be broadcasting all this stuff, but it's going to be something I'm sure you're going to want to keep up with. No questions about it. But, you know, the point that I was trying to make is that the majority of the teams within our league, with the exception of Missouri and Texas and Ole Miss, that get the opportunity to play in one of these, you know, made-for-travel tournaments. And I don't know if that's a great thing for Ole Miss, to be honest with you. You know, when you consider what they have coming back and, you know, kind of what they were last year. But yeah, I thought we'd take a quick look here and just kind of see what the Washington Cougars did. Yeah, you know, what we can expect from the Cougs. They went 21-32 last year. Yeah, 21-32. 9-21 in league play. And of course that was the final year of the Pac-12. And so, you know, that's probably, you know, I would suspect you're going to see Arkansas take that series with some gusto. I would suspect that. I mean, everybody's got an ace. And that's actually going to be a four-game set too. They're going to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So that Monday, that's a 10 a.m. game. You know, maybe you're just hanging around the office or whatever, and you can turn the TV on. You can watch a little college baseball that Monday morning. I think Arkansas is going to be improved over last year. And you say, Steve, how could they be? They lost Hagan Smith. I've said this on our show before. I just didn't think they had a star offensively last year. They had some really good players, but they didn't have guys you had to pitch around. You had a couple of guys that would get hot, and you would kind of, you know, you wouldn't want to give in to them. But I'm eager to see what they look like, and I'm eager to see, you know, these first few weekends of baseball. You don't find a whole lot out about your team in non-conference play, but, you know, when I look at this Arkansas schedule, you know, you get Washington State coming in, you know, but when you look at the rest, like Arkansas, like I'm a Dave Van Horn fan. You know what I mean? Like, even though I know that they're, you know, they're our contemporaries and they've had our number, I think Dave coaches the right way. And I know that he is difficult, and I know that some of our people don't really care for him, but they play a good brand of baseball. Now, after this four-game set against Washington State, Arkansas is in the college baseball series back at Globe Life against Kansas State, TCU, and Michigan. So you get a chance right out of the gate against some Power 5 competition to kind of find out what you are and what you're about. I don't know how great Michigan's going to be. You know, TCU is a team that was in contention last year for the Big 12. Kansas State, of course, had a decent close to the end of the year. But it's really not until you get through those first couple weekends that the schedule kind of lightens up. They get Charlotte that comes in, and then Portland comes in, and the next thing you know, they're in SEC play. And Arkansas opens up on the road at Ole Miss. And so, again, I think about, you know, it's impossible not to think about Ole Miss because they're in the same league, but also the same state as us. And a lot of people wonder, you know, is this the last hurrah for Mike Bianco at Ole Miss? And I think there's a good chance that it may be. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike Bianco. Now, of course, you know, when he first came up and began to kind of kick us around a little bit, you know, we didn't like him. But they were ready to fire this guy, and what does he do? He rallies the troops and wins an AFL championship. But, you know, looking through their schedule, I mean, it's just there's not much to it until they get to Arkansas. I mean, so they have kind of scheduled some wins in there. You know, they do host Southern Miss in a midweek game thing, and Southern Miss not ranked, but you know Southern's going to be in the middle of this thing when it comes to G5 teams. You know so. But it could be a very difficult opening weekend. In Arkansas State, Tommy Raffo, when you know Tommy was there, they always had him. It seemed like Tommy could always get up off the mat and beat Ole Miss. And Tommy's not there anymore. But Arkansas State on a Tuesday, you know, after a difficult weekend, you know, I don't know. Then they get Eastern Kentucky coming in. That should be a winning weekend. You get Southern Miss, Wright State, Southeastern Louisiana. That's always a tough midweek game. Ask LSU. And in Jacksonville State to close it out before Arkansas comes in. And then you got to go to Missouri. And it's going to be miserable, and it's going to be cold, and they're going to be used to it. And you just don't know what to expect. It's tough going to play Kentucky or Missouri in the month of March. And then you come home, and you get rewarded by playing Florida, who was expected to be one of the best teams in the conference. Then you got to go to Kentucky. At least it'll be a little bit warmer then. But that's not great. Two road series north in the conference to open up SEC play. And then you turn around, you get a chance to go home, and you got the defending NFL champions coming in. You go to South Carolina, who's going to be a good team. Then you get Vanderbilt coming in, who I think Vandy's kind of come back down to earth. You got to go to Oklahoma. There's some scout friends of mine that think Oklahoma's going to be better than some people expect. Then you got to go to Mississippi State. Then Auburn comes in. I just think it's going to be a difficult year for them. You know, they avoid LSU, which some ways has been a good thing for them because, you know, they've gone down to Baton Rouge and played pretty well. Mike always kind of gets them up to play. But, you know, you got to deal with Arkansas. You don't get Georgia, you know. And so it's still a difficult schedule, no matter how you slice it. But I think it's going to be an interesting year in Oxford. And I know, you know for years and years and years, baseball was kind of our sport only. They have made a commitment and done a better job here in the last 20, 25 years, as you guys are well aware. But I think we're about to see the end of an era. Now Mike may surprise me, but their portal class was not impressive at all. You go get Mitchell Sanford from LSU, a guy that's had a chronic back issue, and they had to get somebody. But if you go look at their portal class, there's not a lot of substance to it. Coming back from a team that just didn't do a whole lot last year. You know, of course, we lost that series up there because we couldn't throw strikes late in innings. It still chaps my hide that the streak has come to an end in that respect, because we had every opportunity and blew a couple of big leads. And they finished 27 and 29 last year. Two of their 11 conference wins came against us. Brutal, man. Brutal. But, you knew it when they had that series against Hawaii. You know, and they got absolutely shelled by Hawaii. I mean, Hawaii just teed off against Ole Miss pitching. I mean, they truly did. I mean, you look at it and say, well, you know, Stevie, you know, they won 5-4 and 13. And I could make the argument they probably should have gotten swept. But another team that, you know, I'm curious to see, of course, Missouri, we got to go up there. But when I begin to think about, you know, who could be a surprise team this year in SEC baseball, you know, I mean, you know the usual suspects, right? I mean, you expect LSU, Tennessee, Arkansas, you know, Mississippi State, Florida, those teams to be good. I think Georgia may be a little bit overvalued. I think so many people are putting a lot of emphasis on that portal class. And, of course, they get the benefit of playing so many games at Foley Field, which in many respects is a, you know, launching pad. But I'm curious to see what Kentucky's going to look like. They lost an awful lot. I think Vanderbilt's going to be middle of the pack. South Carolina finished 13 and 17 last year. I'm just not sure what to expect from them. But Auburn is one of those teams, and this will sound nuts because they won eight games last year. They finished dead last in the SEC. They were ravaged with injuries. I think they had a decent portal class bordering on good, and they're getting some guys back. There's some guys that were expected to go in the draft that returned. I don't expect Auburn to contend, but I wouldn't be surprised if you look up late and Auburn is in contention for the NCAA tournament. You know what Butch can do? And I think, you know, Butch is one of those kind of guys too, that Butch probably coaches his best baseball when it's kind of the backs against the wall. I mean, everybody needs the good pieces, right? Everybody does. But Butch is one of those guys that has always kind of done more with less. And so he just needs, you know, he needs Cade Fisher to be good. He needs a couple of guys to just kind of step up and just kind of remove, you know, some worry. They weren't great last year. But, you know, you take a quick look at the schedule, and you get Holy Cross, and then you got Wright State coming in. And then you got to go to this Globe Life. I mean, Globe Life, man, is hosting big college baseball weekends, weekend after weekend after weekend. So Auburn's part of one that third weekend, that first final weekend in February, opening part of March. It's Auburn and Ohio State, Oregon State, and Baylor. If you're Oregon State, you got to like the look of that. But, you know, I think you're going to find out about Auburn pitching that weekend. And then you got one more weekend before you kind of get ready. And kind of look at the SEC schedule. You host Vanderbilt. You just never know what that's going to be like. You got to go to Kentucky. Again, that's in March. I hate having to go north in March. Then you go to Georgia, Foley Field. It's a home run derby. Alabama comes in to Auburn. Then you got LSU coming in. You know, no Tommy White this year. Auburn has to go to Texas. And then they host us over there late in April, you know, a series that we should have won over there 2 years ago. And then they got to go to Tennessee, and then South Carolina comes in, and they got to go to Ole Miss. And that Ole Miss series could be huge for Auburn. But I think you look at this team and say, can these guys be around 500? I think so. I think they can, depending on pitching. Because I think offensively they've got some pieces that are very intriguing. Well, if you hadn't done so, go to dudenoblebook.com and you can order signed copies of The Dude and all of my sports titles. And When the Bottom Falls is there as well. I saw a young lady and her husband recently at the Hump. She goes, hey, we have most of your books. Well, he said that. I said, well, now you know what to get him for Valentine's Day. Get him to rest. Yeah, that's a great gift idea. And also, too, Valentine's Day will be approaching soon. And think about the gift of floating. It's a great date night affair. Dial 662-268-7601 and get more information from my lovely wife, Dana. It's important to understand, you know, when you begin to work through this, this is a mom and pop thing. We're not just managing a corporate operation. This is our business. You know, we bought a franchise, pushed all my chips in the middle, and appreciate your support. But I think it'd be a great experience for you. If you've done it before, come on back. Maybe get a membership. But if it's a new experience for you, I think you're going to enjoy just having an opportunity to kind of relax and let your mind rest. If you're a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or pain, we may be able to help you. And always come join us over at jeanspage.com. Hey, that's it. We're back on Friday, hopefully recapping a Mississippi State victory in women's basketball over Auburn. And we'll kind of look ahead to the weekend as the Bulldogs get ready to head to South Carolina. And certainly we'll have an opportunity, of course, to recap our media opportunity with baseball. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.